Asian and Pacific Islander American Identified Community, Cable will be airing all Asian and Pacific Islander programming from 8 a.m. until 4 p.m. on Friday, May 3rd. That day, we'll be airing features from your favorite API KBOO programmers. Tune in to hear episodes of Lip Fantastic, APA Compass, DMA Roberts' award-winning series, Crossing East, and an all-new Pacific Underground and music playlist by Sun Lee and DJ Diablo. That's Asian and Pacific Islander American Heritage Day, Friday, May 3rd, from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m., only on your community radio station, KBOO Portland. For more information and program schedule, just go to our website at kboo.fm.
This is Ursula K. Le Guin, and you are listening to KBOO, the cheerful voice of social conscience, KBOO Portland.
This is KBOO Portland. KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and a grant from the Portland State University Hatfield School of Government, offering a new master's degree in nonprofit leadership for those who believe in the power of collective action for social change. More information online at pdx.edu/Hatfield School. Happy May Day. This is Hard Knock Radio.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Y'all ready for this?
Ladies and gentlemen. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 0.
Never been done before. Never been done
in this
before.
Country. In this country.
Fighting back.
talking about a subject. What's up, fam? You're tuned to Hard Knock here on the Pacifica Network. Up next on the program, we discuss the life, the legacy of filmmaker John Singleton. All this and more ahead, so keep it locked.
Check this out. Hard Knock Radio coming at you, bringing the noise. This is Chuck D, Public Enemy number one, news, views, and hip-hop.
This is Sister Soulja on Hard Knock Radio. Listen closely.
¿Qué pasa, raza? This is Deuce Eclipse, the Oi Joaquin, your parte chino. Check it out. Listening to Hard Knock Radio.
Hey, this is Patrice Rushen, and whenever I'm in the Bay Area and I need good information and great radio, it's all about Hard Knock Radio.
Davey D, Hard Knock Radio, hanging out with you this afternoon. By now, word about the passing of John Daniel Singleton. John Singleton, filmmaker extraordinaire, has probably reached you. It's a big loss. It's a big loss for a whole lot of people who admired the work that this man did. Capturing black life on film, telling important stories, being an activist, a freedom fighter, unrelenting in his desire to uplift our community. That was John Singleton. We know him best for his movie, Boys in the Hood, for which he made history, not only because of the movie which featured Ice Cube for the first time in a cinematic piece, but because he was nominated for Best Director at the youngest age ever, 24 years old. Later on, he went on to put out films like Poetic Justice, Higher Learning, Baby Boy, all important stories that captured black life and uplifted it and gave the world another vision of our community. He put out the film Rosewood, an important story that talked about the terror that many black communities experienced at the turn of the century. He also did Shaft. He did Fast and Furious. He also did Four Brothers, featuring Andre 3000 and I always want to call him Marky Mark, but you know who I'm talking about. Anyway, he was an important guy. We also need to note that Singleton, although he captured the stories in L.A., really got his start up here in Oakland. His first video was done here by an artist by the name of Morocco Mo. That's right. He did his first video shoot up here. And then later on, he went on to film a series called Rebel, which, centered a woman, like a female version of Shaft, except on her own level. Private Eye, who was kicking butt and making things happen. And he talked about, the love that he had for this city. Anyway, we want to look back at the life and times of John Singleton. And on the phone line with us is somebody who is no slouch himself when it comes to filmmaking. We're talking about Matthew McDaniels. Matt, for those who don't know him, his work has been featured primarily in a lot of documentaries. He's the man that's been on the street with his camera in tow, capturing all the landmark events that have really hit Southern California. If we're talking about the Rodney King uprising, it is Matthew McDaniels who was there capturing those important footage and the important words that people were uttering during that time. The gang truce, Matthew McDaniel. If we're talking about NWA, those early footages, that was Matthew McDaniel. A lot of his work is seen in documentaries. And I wanted to have him on because what caught my eye was him posting a picture of him standing with John Singleton and Spike Lee. And he talked about the story behind those three transformative filmmakers coming together. So, Matt, first, my condolences. And second, you know, what is going on to your head right now, losing your friend, John Singleton? What does he mean to you personally?
Okay, well, yeah, you mentioned the picture also, and I'll tell you the story behind that, and that kind of plays into it. And you know what? I'll go ahead and be selfish today. And, you know, it's a loss for everybody, but me personally, it's like this. In the business, it's a hard situation. It's competitive. You know, you need people, especially in film, you can't do it all by yourself. You need people down for you. So with him today, what I've lost personally is like somebody who respected me in the business and would speak for me unsolicited. And, you know, and people, I could talk about myself, somebody else could talk about me, but it coming from John and him understanding it, that's not something that, you know, just, well, okay, that picture. We're in a bookstore. That was August 7th, 2016. Spike was, he had released a journal. So he signs his copies. My little niece, her name is Chantel, she said she wanted to be a filmmaker. So I just went up there. I'm like, I'm going to get Spike to sign. I'm going to buy a book, have Spike sign it to Chantel. And she's like 10 years So, and it was a little bit smaller than I expected. I mean, you know, it was like a line outside. I waited in line. I go in, let a few people in at a time, and it's John Singleton and Shorty, actually. Shorty's kind of in the corner, so it's really just John, and I was like kind of surprised, and John just kind of came to hang out. And so Spike, you know, we're talking about my niece. He signs the journal to my niece. And then me and John are just there chopping it up, talking about a lot of stuff. Hadn't seen him in a long time. Never really got the opportunity to hang out with him even like that. But what started to happen, you know, just turned out really cool for me. He starts, because, you know, we're just really relaxing over a couple of hours. He starts explaining me to Spike Lee. I had even filmed Spike back in the days. I filmed everybody. I started filming. I was an intern at K-Day. January 86 is when I started, and I started filming everybody from that point on. So
yeah, let me just take a quick minute here to let people know who you are, you know, because it helps to give some context. You know, Matthew McDaniel is a guy that you would see in the streets with a camera everywhere capturing all the important moments in Los Angeles. Riots, artists, happenings. He is that street reporter. And, you know, the question that even I was going to ask you is, did you come before John? Because your pedigree goes back.
I definitely came before John Singleton.
Yeah,
I came before, which is so cool. I'm so proud. I like that. I like my lane. So I could also, and then my lane is, who are you? What are you doing? What's your contribution? I need to document you for the whole overall good of the culture. So I didn't hate on anybody. I wasn't really, I'm just capturing so I could, you know, be happy when I saw somebody coming along like John, which was great. So even before Cube, I was always there to, you know, recognize what's next, even to this day. So I like that about myself and my position in the business. So when John came along with Boys in the Hood, it was, you know, it was just all great, you know. And so I knew him from the start. I was already, like I said, I was in play at K-Day, January 86. So all the concerts around L.A., you know, I filmed the N.W.A. interview where they're in the studio with the guns. You see a little bit of that at the end of Straight Outta Compton. That was in November 88. I brought Latifah out to L.A. first. So, like, just everybody I had filmed, you know, in Los Angeles and up, you know, I'm still doing it.
Right.
So Spike, you know, when he was coming through, I would be filming him, but I'm still an intern. I'm just with the camera. I'm just catching whatever I can catch when I can catch it. So I didn't really know Spike as well, and just had met him a few times. So John is kind of breaking down my whole history to him, which that's what I mean, you know, like, you know, it coming from John, it's a whole different thing. And we got to hang out for a few hours. So the cool thing about that picture, you know, I'm just like, wow, this is, you know, beyond cool. Here's John Singleton, you know, Boys in the Hood, representing Los Angeles, like launching Ice Cube's career, you know, just seeing all of that from the start. Spike Lee before that. Spike Lee really kicking off the whole thing for our generation with She's Gotta Have It, Do the Right Thing. And here they are, and then here's one talking to the other about me. And so that picture that you see, what's so cool about it is I was like, nah, no way I'm gonna let this moment pass without getting a picture. And so I stopped him, and, you know, he was kind of laughing about it, like, you know, that, you know, I'm recognizing this moment, and we snapped the picture, and that's kind of why he's laughing, like, you know.
Right. Well, so, it's an iconic picture, and, you know, we'll direct people to it, you know, after the show so they could see it. Let me ask you this. You know, I started off by saying I wanted to get you on because what John did in many ways was he brought these tales, you know, from the community, from the hood, and he put it, especially from L.A., and really demystified it, put it in a context, gave it a politic. And, you know, from your standpoint, because as you noted, you were covering all this stuff. You're out on these streets, and a lot of, you know, a lot of things that often got referenced about L.A. visually would turn to you. How important was John's work? Did you all ever collaborate and talk about that? Or what do you think, you know, he really captured about L.A.?
Not in the way that I did with Gary Gray on Straight Outta Compton with the footage at the end. That was a biopic, so it was more called for. But I shot behind the scenes on Baby Boy, which was kind of dope, too. You know, just keeping everything authentic, even where they shot. But this is the thing I would say that I liked about his work from the start, the whole energy of everything with Cube, just, you know, from the start, it all coming together. Everything was just so authentic. Like a lot of movies at the time just say when you see club scenes and you know if it's somebody that's from the culture or not, because just stuff doesn't feel real. It doesn't, you know. The dancing, the music, just the everything's too perfect. John kind of came along and, you know, it just felt really grimy, really like, you know, he caught it like it was. He's even getting Ice Cube at the time that he got him. And just mixing everybody with skills. Ice Cube's the raw talent. You have Regina King in the movie that was already, you know, seasoned, and Nia Long and other people, you know, and then just him, the age that he was, what he's being influenced by, what's going on every second of the day in Los Angeles, right around all of us. And then just, and look, even with all of that, not everybody has it. It's especially directing your vision and stuff. It's you know, that's a certain, it's like singing or, you know, anything else. It's, you know, people put their personal touch on it, and then that's what's going to make it special. So that's his eye. That was his talent for, you know, what he saw around him. I'm impressed with somebody that can just write, like, and write all, you know, the dialogue, make it make sense, hold you the whole time. And I don't think I'm that great. I'm still, you know, working on that. I'm great. I have a great eye. I can capture it. That's a whole nother thing. And, you know, once again, that's why I appreciate that picture so much. I do something a little different.
Right.
But, you know, I'm definitely official, and because not everybody's going to see it that way. It's a lot of people in the business that just come into things and, you know, they don't know. It's a lot of people don't even know about junk. They'll be finding out now.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. You know, let me ask you, we're talking with filmmaker Matthew McDaniel about, you know, John Singleton and, you know, his work with him and how they, you know, what John has contributed. What did you learn from John, and what do you think John might have picked up from you since you predate him?
I mean, see, now I don't want to get myself in trouble, and let me keep it humble. I don't know that John learned anything from me. I think I'm a valuable, like, service, you could say, where I'm capturing what's going on and you can actually see the real. And then I was in a lot of places. So technically, you know, as far as filmmaking, I haven't gone to the level that he went to. So, you know, I think I might have, you know, picked up some things about him, or just he reinforced what I was already doing just by, you know, respecting it.
Right. And that attention to detail, bringing that authenticity that you were talking about.
Yeah, definitely. So that's where, because I'm the actual guy, like you know, when you're making a documentary, you'll talk about something and I can show you the actual thing you're talking about, which is always valuable. So for a filmmaker, what somebody's wearing, you know, what locations and everything. But the thing about Boys in the Hood, though, it was actually current, you know, when you think about it, like the story, what it was a current story.
Yeah, it was current at that time. And I don't know if people can fully appreciate. I mean, it was real. I guess you really had to be around at that time. And I guess for people in L.A., that was like, wow, that was like life. That was real life.
Yeah, it's so fun for me, too. Like, I've been lucky to have been a part of so many classics. Now, I wasn't a part of Boys in the Hood, but it feels like I was, because everybody in that movie that's on the screen, I knew in one way or another, or, you know, was around when it happened. So just even seeing Ice Cube go to that point, and I've been filming him since the start of NWA, and to see him graduating his career to, you know, taking what he did, getting together with John, and then that movie in particular, which, you know, is coming out of NWA and everything, influenced heavily by NWA and everything that was going on with that, even the title of the film, Boys in the Hood. But, you know, seeing it take it to another level and go worldwide, you know, hearing the president comment on it at the time, George Bush, that was a big deal. You know, the movie was a phenomenon. And, you know, and specific here to Los Angeles and this whole world that people kind of, you know, really didn't know about, and him shedding light on it. So,
you know, I was talking to you, you know, off camera, we're talking with filmmaker Matthew McDaniel, and I was saying, you know, in my classes, I see you and John all the time, because you're in some of the documentaries that we show. And, you know, the recent one that we show is the whole thing with the Rodney King, you know, riots or rebellions, you know. Of course, we mentioned a lot of the footage that you have wind up being on The Chronic. But in that documentary, they show John Singleton deeply involved in, you know, just the outcome. He's over in Simi Valley.
Oh, absolutely.
He's kicking up dust, you know, around the verdict. Can we talk about, like, he was just like a real guy. He wasn't like the velvet rope, like, you can't touch him. He was out there in these streets like you.
Well, I was telling somebody today, you know, I was thinking about it. Okay, so when Nipsey died just weeks ago, somebody said, you know, they're comparing him. They said he was two times Tupac. And then they were saying, you know, Tupac talked about a lot of stuff. He lived till he was 26. Nipsey lived a little longer. He did a lot of the things Tupac was talking about.
Right.
And so I could see and get the comparison. And I'm like, okay, this is kind of interesting because John now kind of goes back to reminding me of Nipsey. Like, we, you know, everybody's learned a lot about Nipsey and why, you know, what was positive about him. And, you know, and it, you know, but before he died, you don't really think about it. People didn't think about it. He was just right there, easily accessible. And with John, he's sort of like that too, coming along independent at the time, outspoken, taking a stand. It could just be easy, even as a black filmmaker, to say, how do I fit in? How do I not rock the boat? How do I move myself forward? How do I not piss off white people so that they want to hire me to do this and that? And he took off, and he was a part of, you know, a movement at that time that, you know, has something to say, and he was going to be successful and safe in that. He was, you know, just keeping it real, and, you know, not forgetting who he was and where he came from and what was important. And I'm saying, you know, just not forgetting, you know, that he was black first and foremost in his work and everything that he did. So,
and like you said, you're right there in Hollywood, but he wasn't going to allow himself to get caught up in the Hollywood vortex. He was willing to, his base was the community.
Absolutely, and made it cool to, you know, keep that, you know, in front of everybody's consciousness. Like, you know, made it fashionable to be down. A lot of other stuff at the time, Public Enemy, just, you know, a whole movement, but he fit in it in another category. So
let me ask you this, you know, you mentioned something that I don't want it to go over people's heads. You talked about him taking that raw talent and cultivating it. You know, Boys in the Hood were introduced to Ice Cube. We never seen Ice Cube act until that. That's the raw talent. And, you know, Cube has gone on to be a successful filmmaker. He has, you know, well, some people would argue, you know, Tupac had the training, but Tupac is in the poetic justice thing, right? You know, some, one might argue that it's raw talent, definitely with some of the comedians that he had in there, you know, which we also forget about that. Baby Boy, which was a transformative film. We see, you know, a young Snoop. And, you know, I don't know if that was his first thing on the, you know, first time really on the big screen. You know, you being behind the scenes, at least with the Baby Boy thing, how did he manage to really nurture that raw talent? How was he able to kind of pull that out? Or was that something that he already saw and all he just needed to do is give them a platform?
I mean, well, look, first of all, with Snoop, you're talking about like Snoop or even a Cube or a Tupac. Those are like, you know, raw talents. Like, you let them go, you let them do their thing. They're already, they're naturals, you know. I'm assuming, and, you know, seeing how that went, so they're there because of who they are already, so you know what they're bringing to the table. So I can't really speak so much to that, you know. And once again, I'm kind of doing my thing, but I do have a little bit of a funny story. And, you know, working with John, something that was a really embarrassing moment. And first of all, John was no joke. John wasn't no punk when it came time to work and do what he needed to do and everything. And I really, like, very, you know, he's the captain of the ship. You know, you have to be it. So, trying to see, how do I say this? Okay, so I had a very embarrassing moment. And he was really generous about it. So he what happened was, there was a scene being filmed. I'm doing behind the scenes. I have a camera. It was a new camera. And somehow I'm taking pictures. I don't know what I did, but I had the flash on. And so he's in the middle of a scene. And sure enough, I snap a picture. It was such a cool shot. But bam, the flash goes off. Camera rolling, I ruined the scene, and he stopped and he said, "Who fucked up my shot?" And I'm telling you, like, it was like fear, embarrassment, shame, like it. But here's the thing, and I didn't say anything. I kind of froze. It was horrible, if you could imagine. But here's the thing. He knew it was me. He saw me. He was just being cool. He, you know, it was a terrible mistake. But, of course, I didn't even say anything. And he just kind of, you know, let it go. So, but I'm just saying he had every right to be a lot more upset. Just even being on schedule, you know,
he could have went ham on you. He could have been a real prima donna, but he wasn't, you know?
Oh, yeah. He absolutely, once again, was just giving me respect and didn't even want to, you know, go nuts on me.
I hear that. He always seemed very humble when I met him, you know? I didn't get a chance to really hang, but the few times that I met him, always solid people, and just he seemed down to earth. But, you know, like I said, to me, he seemed like, to the degree that you've been that documentarian for L.A. and you captured so much, he gave it that cinematography. That's what I felt like. When you saw his stories, I really felt like he was capturing these important aspects of, you know, not just L.A., but Black America in general. Black folks at that time in the 90s, when a lot of his films were really hitting, to me, those are, you know, those are crucial. Those are those things that we can look back and say, remember back in the day, and we that.
And even, you know, just him just showing, you know, how it was in L.A. for people who didn't know. And it's important. You don't have to overdo it. And, you know, he has skills in that way. Sometimes, you know, telling the story, people can, you know, try to, you know, take it a little bit overboard, and then it's not as realistic, and you kind of, you know, defeat your point. And so that with Boys in the Hood and that movie, it all came together, like, right cast, the right time, and John. So, you know,
real talk. You know, Matthew, we appreciate you taking time out. Before we go, one, do you have any projects that you're working on we should be on the lookout for? And two, what do you want to leave our audience with? You know, you're being heard, you know, not just in Cali, but around the country. You know, what are two or three things that you want them to remember about John Singleton?
Just, you know, he was he will be remembered. It's not even how I would want him to, you know, but he will be remembered right up there, I'm confident, over time, just with all the greats. Absolutely. And when I say greats, I mean Scorsese, Alfred Hitchcock even. And when I say that, I'm not even going to compare the movies. I just mean as far as those people spoke to a certain lane, a certain time, a certain audience, and what they did. Alfred Hitchcock, in his category, was excellent. Martin Scorsese, the movies that he makes, who he spoke to, excellent. John Singleton, the time period that he comes out of, who he spoke to, the careers that he launched. Even that movie, Boys in the Hood, just who you know, having that movie, Nia Long, Ice Cube,
Maurice Chestnut,
Chestnut, Cuba Gooding Jr. Who else did we say? Larry Fishburne.
That's right.
I mean, you know, just an amazing. Oh, MC8, even, you know, from Compton's Most Wanted, the group, all the other personalities, you know, that we discovered in that movie. So,
and it was an important story. You know, the story itself was important. Fatherhood, the challenges of being in the hood, all that stuff. I think, I don't know if we have a full appreciation for what that film was about.
Absolutely, and that's what I mean, where I really admired his writing skills, the age that he was, and to be able to just, you know, see that going on, to capture it and put it in the script. It's a lot of scripts that can be written, but like you said, he touched on all of those points and showed them in a way, showed, you know, just the difficulties. So you could really look at that movie and just be not from that world, and you could get a lot out of it that could let you understand it a little better. And so that's a value. It's, you know, with his work being believable and the subject matter, where we're always, you know, being misrepresented. So, you know, he came along, he was a strong voice, just as Spike Lee, you know, was. And we need more than one.
Yeah.
It can't, you know, we need many. So that's the great thing about him, that spoke to, you know, he came from this geographical location with all this stuff going on, all this history here that's unique to Los Angeles. So, well, and that's why I said one of a kind.
Definitely.
Nobody really to match up. Gary Gray is absolutely, you know, great. You know, and so he's another one, you know, but John, you know, coming along with Boys in the Hood, that was the one really that just really kicked it open for us out here. And, you know, I would just say even Ice Cube and all that comes from Ice Cube and what he became in film and how he branched out. It's amazing, really, when, you know, and like you said, people are just now starting to, you know, just really think about it. And it, the more you think about it, the more branches of the tree appear.
No, definitely. And, you know, we appreciate you taking some time out, Matthew. Matthew McDaniel, filmmaker out of L.A., sharing with us his thoughts on and the contributions, the important contributions of John Singleton. And, of course, Matthew McDaniel, the documentarian, if there's anything on the West Coast, in particular L.A., this is the brother that would have had filmed it, you know, has it in his archives. He's that person that, you know, you can't tell the story of L.A., you know, hip-hop and beyond without talking and seeing your rich archives. And so we appreciate you sharing your thoughts with us this afternoon. Again, our condolences. And if anybody wants to get a hold of you, is there a website or any place, any way that we can, you know?
Just hit me up on Instagram. It's The Kid Stays in Hip-Hop.
The Kid Stays in Hip-Hop.
The Kid Stays in Hip-Hop.
Well, there you have it. Matthew, thank you so much, man. Much appreciated.
All right. Thank you.
We're going to take a break on Hard Knock Radio.
Hard Knock. Turn the speakers in your car up. Quality program. Turn in for the real talk. Don't stop. EMN at it again. Sandman, Daddy Man. Chris Juwan Kim. Yeah. Innovation. Stimulating ill conversation. Anything else is just imitation. Simulation. Step into the zone. The Bay Area zone. Hard Knock Radio. Let's go. Big shout out to Nita and Davey D. Yeah, right, feel me? Yeah. Honing down at Hard Knock Radio.
Hard Knock Radio.
Kinda crazy though.
Yeah.
Oakland stand up.
Yeah.
Stand up.
Ensemble Big Night Wolves.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
Come on, y'all.
Why every novice think they hard knock when they ain't going all in and ain't paid the cost of the fee? Hating that they made they beats trying to eat till they nearly from the steel gray boots. Yeah. And leave. Maybe they'll save you a seat at the table with their great bread making a speech. Say peace to their lovers, I name with a bee. Hey, there's some shade on your name in the street. Pick up.
Real Talk Radio.
You are now rocking with the best in the West.
West Coast. Monday through Friday. East Coast. Dance out.
And again, you're tuned to Hard Knock here on the Pacifica Network. In step with the last conversation featuring Matthew discussing the legacy of John Singleton, up next we have a conversation where John Singleton was interviewed by hip-hop journalist Sway discussing Tupac, Oakland, and much more. In the conversation, you hear John Singleton's passion and commitment to truth. Stay tuned.
Rebel, well, she was a former police officer?
Yeah, you have to watch the movie okay. that I directed, but she starts out as a police officer and becomes a private eye.
Why'd you decide to put it in Oakland?
Because it's like I figured the Bay is one of those places that hasn't been exploited really at all on film in terms mm-hmm. of black people. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because this is the first thing that I'm going to do in the Bay. There's some other stuff I'm going to do. I can't even talk about it here but mm-hmm. right now. But it just... There's something about the Bay. It's funny. I didn't even remember that you was from the Bay until you just told me, right? And it's like there's a whole other thing of blackness up there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I remember when I first started, like, interested in making movies and everything, the first job that I got was a dude who was a drug dealer in the Bay. You remember this dude? He wasn't a good rapper.
Uh-huh.
He called himself Morocco Mo.
Morocco Mo, yeah.
Do you know that name? He's a preacher now. I mean, he's probably going to call him.
He was an independent rapper, yeah.
But dude gave me, like, a couple of G's to make his video. Uh-huh. We went up there, took a van up there, got some equipment, and we were shooting with all these cats near the projects. And we were about to see everybody's, this, you know, when videos first started. And they was excited to be in a video, and I was like, wait, y'all ain't got no girls? What are girls?
Uh-huh.
You know, it was next to a drive-in liquor store.
Was it in Oakland?
It was in Oakland.
It
was a drive-in liquor store. A drive-through liquor store.
Drive-through, yeah.
Yeah, you know, I was just, I literally just got off the plane today because I knew you was going to be on the show. And I was sitting talking with Daryl Lil D. Reed. You know who he is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he just did 22 years.
Wow, we mentioned him in the thing.
I was
we
with
met,
him.
We mentioned Lil D. And you will see... You would see when you see Rebel on BT,
mm-hmm.
you would see we mentioned him. We mentioned Felix
Mitchell.
We mentioned Lil D.
Yep. Felix Mitchell was his uncle, just to put it in context, yeah. was his uncle.
Okay.
He moved a lot of heroin back in the day. He mm-hmm. was killed in prison.
Mm-hmm. Aunt Flowers. We talk about all that stuff yep. on the show.
Wow.
Aunt Flowers. These are all guys who were in the streets at that time trying to make it however they could. Lil mm-hmm. Daryl became like one of the biggest distributors of cocaine. Went to jail now, but here's the reverse though, John. Now, what we're meeting about is how we're going to reverse the effects of all that they yes. did back then
yes.
in the city of Oakland.
Yes.
You know, so it's good that you're putting the spotlight on Oakland.
Yeah.
That's a big deal, man. Congratulations.
Thank you very much, man.
You always have made films that have been socially significant and have given an inside lens to how we grow up in our communities. Was that always the agenda, you know?
No, it really wasn't. It was just like, I'm just doing what I'm interested in.
Okay.
You know, I mean, I'm a black man living in America.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
You know, you're going to have that, you know, you don't have that kind of like, that just like, you know, hey, everything's rosy kind of attitude. You uh-huh. know, be a black man in America, you know, it's something for you at whatever level.
Yeah.
So I'm just doing what I'm interested in.
John Singleton has joined us. Rebels, the new series on BET tomorrow night, 10 p.m. We got JB from DC on the line. What up, JB?
JB!
What up, though?
What up, hey. Phil?
What's up?
Oh, man, I got a quick... Well, actually, I got a two-part question for John. The first part is, what was your experience like? No, what was the experience like working and directing Tupac? And then two, what do you think about Ice Cube and how he's transformed into this mega movie mogul that he is now?
Good questions. It was great working with Pac. I'm sad because we only had a chance to work on one movie where, like, you know, after that experience, like, we had a dozen films that we wanted to make, you know, and it, not just me directing him as an actor. He had aspirations to actually direct himself, you know, and... we just had a really light plan. It's like, you have to imagine, like, what if Martin Scorsese after Mean Streets or Taxi Driver lost Robert De Niro?
Yeah.
So that's the void in my thing. And I don't think I've ever had an actor that complimented me as well as he does, you know, in terms mm-hmm. of like our shared experiences coming from the same time and place. You know what I mean? Like, we were children of the revolution. So we had a kind of an attitude like, okay, there's some different things that we can do with film. Hey, man, you know, Cube is like my brother. You know, I'm so happy we came into this business together and we're like rising, you know, and we're still talking, hanging and stuff. And it just, he's building an empire. He's built an empire. I think that what's beautiful about the stuff that we do is our success begots a whole lot of other people's success and allows them to do all the things. You see what I'm saying? You know, if he had, if Cube hadn't done Friday, you know, you wouldn't have Straight Outta Compton.
Good point.
You
good
know?
Point. Yeah. Is that, I know you got, you were very outspoken about on this Tupac movie that's coming out through Morgan Creek. Is that part of the reason why it was, you know, so personal to you because of the relationship you have with Tupac?
Yeah, because, you know, I damn near died trying to like work on that movie and do the script and everything and stuff and delineate all the people that wanted the movie to be their story in relationship to Pac. You know, I mean, everybody wanted this, you know, to do the Tupac and Me movie instead of the Tupac movie. And you know, I'm tired of really talking about it just to say, you know, really, just real, but cause I ain't never gonna see the movie, whatever. But I just don't feel that they had true love for Pac. You know, they made a movie about a rapper, and Tupac was much more than a rapper. You know, and what I was trying to do with the story was show where that music came from, there, you know, and where it came from, the heart of where it came from. You know, him being a child of the revolution and the tragedy of where he ended up at the end of his life. Not necessarily just how he died, but the tragedy of what the last few years of his life were like.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you didn't, you know, that's everybody sees the Thug Life stuff towards the very end of it, but that wasn't his original vision for himself. You know, he wanted to really inspire people, you know, and it was, it's tragic that he had to transform from Tupac to Machiavelli. You know, I wonder if they're going to have that. I wonder if they understand why Pac had to become Machiavelli.
Yeah.
So I had that. And, you know. So.
Well, but the glory is you could.
And I, my movie was, you know, because we were from the same time.
Yeah.
What I had planned, people would celebrate and a lot of people would have been pissed off too. Because I was going personal.
Yeah.
Hard on a whole lot of folks in our generation. Like, because we know the stories, the various stories. And then, you know, just, but, you know, I will say, one day maybe I'll make that film. There's other things I'm trying to do right now.
All
right,
man, I hope you do, man.
Some help, pal. But life make a record, ain't easy. It ain't what I expected. kids to get sleazy. But I guess that the streets is harder. Trying to survive in the life of a young godfather. My homie is making it elsewhere. Striving, working 9 to 5 with no healthcare. We both had dreams of being great, but it's the birth. And blood and change the shape. It's fake. It wasn't my choice to make. To be great, I'm giving it all it takes. Trying to shake the plates and face the snakes. I gotta take my plates are far from great. The bullets lit, the plates is quick and great. Smiling face to hide the tricks of hate. But my homie would never do me wrong. That's why I wrote the song. If you ever need me, it's on. No matter who the foe, they must fall. Us against them all, I'm down the road.
Hard Knock Radio, East, West, Hard North, radio, South, man. Conectados, every set, every hood, barrio to barrio, y'all stand up, stay righteous, speaking to the thugs, one love, we know where y'all at, top, Brown Buffalo. It's a hard knock life, gotta pay your bills. They want a song about bling, but it ain't real. We speak to the kids and the OGs. Organize, mobilize, be the change you wanna see. 415s bumping Hard Knock Radio. Brown Buffalo, rah, all up in your stereo. And to the youth, live life like it's golden. Go dumb, go hard, but don't forget where you're going. We from the hood, so it's all to the good. Let us know this, what you're feeling is right. Let's get this understood. It's only one reason why we here today. We trying to make real music so the people can relate.
Learning from the hard knocks, slipping in these hard knocks, listening to hard knocks, questioning the park. Learning through these hard knocks, living for this hip hop, listening to hard knocks, rapping to the hard side. Learning from the hard knocks, living in these hard knocks, listening to hard knocks, questioning the park. Learning through these hard knocks, living for this hip hop, listening to hard knocks, rapping to the hard side.
Another struggle. My beloved friends, I would be remiss if I did not take this opportunity to mention my dear big brother, Keith Cook. Happy birthday, brother. We gather again another day, in another year, another battle, and yes, another battle won. Thanks to you, the people, we, you and I, have battled in city streets and in rural courtrooms in this struggle for freedom. But how about the struggle for life itself? When I was on death row, facing death warrants with dates to die, you took to the streets of over a dozen cities to say no. Your simple yet powerful no stopped the hand of the executioner and opened the door to life. And when I was sent to another toxic site called a prison, and my health crashed, and I came closer to death than any time I was on death row, you stood in the snow at the gates of the prison, at the parking lot of the hospital, demanding I receive good treatment and care. You, the people, stood with me when I was unconscious in a diabetic coma, and you filled every courtroom available to demand freedom and justice. What a movement this is. We are on the move, for real. And we still are today. What is behind such a movement as this? The answer is as simple as it is profound. Love. I am your brother, and you, all of you, are my family. You are my sisters and my brothers, my aunts and uncles, my people. To thank you, you who've done so much for so long, seems so small. And yet, I thank you, all of you. Thank you for radiating so much love over this long struggle. We're not done. We have more to do. We have work to do, yes. But before us also stands justice and freedom. So in all the ways I can, please allow me to say in Kikuyu, Degu, in Somali, Mahatsinet, in Arabic, Shukran, in Swahili, Asante San, in Chinese, Xiexie, in Japanese, Arigato Gozaimasu, in French, Merci, in German, Danke, in Spanish, Gracias, and in Ebonics, good looking out, y'all. I thank you all for all you've done and for what we are about to do. From Imprisoned Nation, this is Mumia Abu Jamal.
All's my life I has to fight. All's my life I, hard times like yeah, bad trips like yeah. Nazareth, I'm f***ed up, homie, you f***ed up. But if God got us, then we gon' be alright.
We gon' be alright. We gon' be alright. We gon' be alright. Do you hear me? Do you feel me? We gon' be alright. We gon' be alright. Huh? We gon' be alright. We gon' be alright. Do you hear me? Do you feel me? We gon' be alright.
And when I wake up, I recognize you looking at me for the pay cut. Bahamas, I be looking at you from the face down. One Mac 11, even room with the bass down. Skimming, and let me tell you about my life. Painkillers only put me in the twilight. We're pretty, Benjamin is the highlight. I tell my mama I love her, but this what I like. Lord knows, 20 of them in my Chevy. Tell them all to come and get me, reaping everything I sow. So my karma come in heaven, no preliminary hearings on my record. I'm a f***ing gangster in silence for the record. Tell the world I knew it's too late. Boys and girls, I think I've gone crazy. Trying to side my face is all day. Won't you please believe when I say, when you know we've been hurt, been down before. When our pride was low, looking at the world like where do we go. And we hate po-po, wanna kill us dead in the street for sure. I'm at the preacher's door, my knees getting weak and my gun might blow. But we gon' be alright. You can live at the mall. I can see the evil, I can tell it. I know it's illegal, I don't think about it. I deposit every other zero, thinking of my partner. Put the candy, painting on a Rico, digging in my pocket. Ain't a profit big enough to feed you. Every day my logic, get another dollar just to keep you in the presence of your Chico. I don't talk about it, be about it. Every day I see cool. If I got it, then you know you got it. Heaven, I can reach you. Pet dog, pet dog, pet dog, my dog, that's all. Pick back and chat, I trap the back for y'all. I rap, I black on tracks, so rest assured. My rights, my wrongs, I write till I'm right with God. When you know, we've been hurt, been down before. When our pride was low, looking at the world like, where do we go? And we hate po-po, wanna kill us dead in the street for sure. I'm at the preacher's door, my knees getting weak and my gun might blow, but we gon' be alright.
Nights in my prayers.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Portland Pete Seeger Tribute and 100th birthday celebration on Friday, May 3rd from 7 to 9:30 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater in Portland. The 6th annual Pete Seeger Tribute is a family-friendly sing-along event that features Lauren Sheehan, Peter Hayes, Ben Davis, Bill Merlin, and many more. Again, that's the Portland Pete Seeger Tribute and 100th Birthday Celebration on Friday, May 3rd from 7 to 9:30 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Roots in Harmony Cathedral Park Performing Arts Collective benefit on Saturday, May 4th at 6 p.m. at the Wayfinding Academy in Portland. Roots in Harmony is the third annual benefit show and silent auction to support the Cathedral Park Performing Arts Collective. There will be live music and theater performances, a seasonally inspired meal, a silent auction, and more. Again, that's the Roots in Harmony Cathedral Park Performing Arts Collective benefit on Saturday, May 4th at 6 p.m. at the Wayfinding Academy, 8010 North Charleston Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Hey, tonight's KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from Hopworks Urban Brewery, offering sustainable brews and local food for 10 years. Serving the community at three locations, Hopworks Urban Brewery on Southeast Powell Boulevard, Bike Bar at North Williams Avenue, and in Vancouver on Southeast Mill Plain Boulevard. More information online at hopworksbeer.com. Hey, no matter where you're listening, it is a little after 8 o'clock here at KBOO Portland, 91.9 FM in the Hood River, Columbia Gorge area, 104.